Hello everyone, this is Dario Betti. Welcome to our podcast on everything to do with the world of crypto, you would say right now, but once upon a time we used to say blockchain and other things. We have our expert, Daniele Menzi. Hi Daniele.
Hey Dario, thank you for the expert. How's it going?
Well, I think you deserve it. Definitely. I mean, you're the expert here. It's not me. So you must be somebody.
Thank you.
No, but as people that have seen us before, they know that you're really working. You're really doing stuff out there. And so we love to hear from you what's happening. And one thing we've done in some other of our podcasts is to talk about some of the sexy, exciting stuff. I say sexy because if one of the fangs, you know, if a company with huge reach and capital start doing things in blockchain, everybody pays attention. And Facebook was probably the first one to do it. And we have talked about Facebook before, Daniele, haven't we?
I think we already talked about this probably 5 to 10 times. Now, jokes apart, so we were pretty excited to announce the Libra project, and I think that was communicated back in June 2019. Actually, I was in Dubai by the time the announcement has happened, and I was with a guy that owns the Libra brand. And he was shocked by the fact that Facebook was announcing something with his brand I was not aware of. And I asked him, are you somehow connected to Facebook? He told me, no, I'm not. So, well, jokes apart, yeah, it's something we're still attached to it within our podcast.
But let's say that actually that story is quite interesting because it wasn't just that guy surprised. It was lots of people were surprised, including some of the regulators. Facebook had not sweetened the pill before. And I think what we've seen after, well, first of all, a lot of the original founders have moved away from the project, realizing a bit of obstacles, let's say. And there already was a first phase of Libra really changed, didn't it? And that was not the same even 6 months after.
Yeah, it was big changes, actually, that happened as a whole. Let's say the community of non-crypto users or non-crypto fans at the beginning did not understand what this was about, you know, because when you start talking about digital currencies, so most of the people that are not in finance don't understand what is a digital currency, because we think that money, it's kind of in a paper, in a physical form, while money is no longer this. So just a very limited supply is physical. So less than 10% as a whole for euro and US dollar, for example. So most of the money is already digital. So, and most of the money moves, you know, on web, say on the web as a whole, even though it's not technically the web. So we already using and touching every sort of digital money in our day-by-day interaction with plastic cards, with wire transfer, with anything we're doing online. While, you know, this project was announced, Libra, it was a kind of cumbersome for people to understand what is the difference between Libra and any other sovereign-based currency like US dollar and euro. So from a practical terms, not from a philosophical terms, but from a compliance and regulation standpoint, so from more sophisticated standpoints. So people start asking questions, what is the difference? What is the fundamental difference between Libra and all the rest? And there was actually in the former vision of Facebook a huge difference, because Facebook is not just a player. It's a player that right now is aggregating 2.8 billion active users in the platform, daily active users, sorry. Such a company enters into a giant move and trying to introduce a currency. So from a government point of view, and I'm taking US first, there might be kind of a systemic risk for the sovereign based currency, which is the US dollar. And in the former vision of Facebook, the idea was to do something different than the US dollar. So, and at that time, the big discussion was, hold on a second. 2.8 billion people into your platform, you introduce a new currency called whatever the name is, backed by something which is not a US dollar only. So these will introduce a systemic risk for the US economy as a whole. Okay. So sorry, for the US ecosystem, US Treasury, US dollar, let's say, ecosystem as a whole. It has introduced a kind of systemic risk discussion. So a lot of hearings, Mark Zuckerberg, in the US, your back and forth interaction, you know, later, a few months later, the project, you know, progressively has stopped. So many people left so-called Libra Association, starting from Visa, MasterCard first. And at the end of the day, this former vision was abandoned and the project was halted for a period of time and now it's been re-energized. And here we are to talk about Diem.
Welcome, Diem. So here we go. New name, first of all, but there is more under the bonnet than just a name. First of all, I understand. So as you were saying, great plans at the beginning, still great plans today, but much reduced in its scope. The creation of a completely new currency, which was not aligned with the state-backed fiat currency. This is the dollar, isn't it?
Yeah. So in fact, the big discussion here was about regulation and compliance. About that, because in the former vision of Libra, the so-called Libra stablecoin was backed by a basket of different assets, both currency, so sovereign-based currency like USD and Euro, and other bond-issued assets. So it was kind of a mixture between currency, bond, and other stuff, if I recall properly. By the end of the day, most of it was currency and bond. And guaranteed by different governments across the world. So it was like something different than US dollar. So one Libra, the value of one Libra couldn't be $1 all along because it was backed by different baskets, different assets. So perhaps one Libra equal to $1.5 at day one, and one Libra in 2 months or 3 months, in 6 months could have been $2 or $1. So at the end of the day, the relative fluctuation between the Libra and the dollar had changed over time, depending on market condition and depending on the underlying assets within Libra. And obviously, this has introduced the risk I was highlighting before. So a lot of hearings, whatever. And now the new concept of DM is essentially to peg one-to-one, one DM equal to $1. So this means there's no real volatility or fluctuations between Libra and dollar. One DM will be always equal to $1 within perhaps a very, very small margin of fluctuation. Very, very small margin of fluctuation. But essentially, the concept of having a basket of assets is being removed. Okay.
There was one of the original claim that it would popularize banking and make it a stable, real stable coin, even for those, you know, developing markets where they might be more affected by fluctuations versus the dollars, etc. That doesn't go away, but it's really much more diminished now. And so we're moving away from the original claims of ending world underbanking.
Well, I mean, at the end, let's say, if you see how stable coin works as a whole, so you have, let's say, the coin, let's say DM or whatever the name is. In the case of other crypto assets, you have USDC, USDT, you have Binance USD. So any USD something, okay? So at the end of the day, those are crypto assets. So meaning that they are being issued on a blockchain, but the representative unit of these assets is the US dollar at the end of the day. So this means all those stablecoin projects should have into their treasury an equivalent amount of US dollar, let's say, equivalents. If I take the example of USDT, so the Tether stablecoin, it's being a lot of discussion by different regulatory bodies, mostly in New York, the General Attorney of the dedicated agency that has made investigations against them into New York. Actually, they managed to somehow to prove the community that there's no real 100% backing of all the USDT that are being issued and minted on the blockchain. Let's say there is $60 billion US dollar worth of USDT. There's not necessarily $60 billion in a bank account. But it might be different forms of collateral. If I'm not mistaken, most of that was commercial papers, or essentially bonds or loans, okay, that were used as a form of collateral to back all the crypto tokens being issued and minted. So, and obviously, from a compliance point of view, what is the risk? The risk is that if the collateral structure is not good enough, there might be that one of these issuers ends up in trouble, and the people that hold the USDT, or I'm not saying USDT, or USDX, I'm saying something that does not exist, might lose this value because their collateral structure is not consistent. Okay, so that's why there's a lot of, let's say, pressure by the regulator, because essentially this is real money. And USD something, so the so-called stablecoin, are the most traded assets within the crypto land. Because every time you make a transaction to move Bitcoin to Ethereum to digital bits, which is the blockchain I'm representing, you always have to convert in USDT most of the time. So you use stablecoin just to hedge volatility risk, to buy, to convert an asset into another one over time. So for example, you want to sell BTC, in case of market volatility, you want to park with a USDT. Once you buy USDT, then you are no longer exposed to market volatility. And then later you execute another trade with another currency or with another token, let's say digital bit. So you sell USDT, you buy the new token, and USDT is gone. So the regulator.
Yeah, let me intercept just for some people. So where BTC stands for Bitcoin, currency, and the USDT is, as you were saying, this Bitcoin, which is pegged to the USD. So you change from Bitcoin to USD.
USDT is the stable coin of US dollar.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no stable coin for BTC. Okay. So BTC is its own.
It's so volatile.
Yeah. So you want to sell BTC on crypto markets. You cannot sell in crypto markets BTC and then immediately have the cash into your bank account. Okay, you cannot do this transaction in one step. You have to do it in multiple steps. You can sell, for example, your BTC in exchange of USDT, and then liquidate your USDT, which is still a crypto asset, and get euro in exchange into your bank account. Then you can do that. Okay.
Now, let's go back to, I would say, some of the positive learnings as well, because we're giving a bit of a, not indirectly, but a bit of a bash and said, well, it didn't work, poor Facebook. But actually, Facebook did very well for the industry, I would say, to shake up. All of its regulators had to deal with the hot potato of, Facebook is going to do something tomorrow. What do I do now? Your quick review first. How much has changed the overall regulatory framework for Bitcoins, et cetera?
So it's changing. So Bitcoin itself is a decentralized technology. It doesn't change because someone is asking to have clarity from a regulatory standpoint. So the technology stays exactly the same as it used to be years ago. Okay, it doesn't change anything. Bitcoin is still Bitcoin as it used to be. Besides some forks that happening and what they will happen in the future, I mean, Bitcoin is the most conservative, or is among the most conservative crypto assets currently existing, and also is extract its value because it's extremely resilient and secure, because also it's not moving fast in terms of technology upgrades, whatever. So the community loves the fact that Bitcoin doesn't change so often, because it gives us stability to the behavior and to the structure of Bitcoin as a whole. So what are the regulatory advancements into the Bitcoin, if I say, space? Well, most of the advancements are going into the gates where the people used to enter into crypto and get out from crypto, which is essentially the exchanges. Because the exchanges are the platforms that are those that somehow have to comply with certain rules, mostly anti-money laundering, bad actor reports, disclosure reports, illicit transactions report, and so on and so forth. So most of the regulation is going to these platforms, because they have to comply with applicable jurisdiction. The problem is that most of the assets we're talking about, and I'm talking about now very simple stuff on the spot market, so let's say Bitcoin spot, they classify themselves as a virtual asset, as digital property. So they are not a financial instrument. I'm not talking about derivatives right now. I'm talking about Bitcoin traded on the spot market. So from a regulator standpoint, in most of the jurisdiction, they are not a regulated product. Okay, you can buy and sell. There's no problem with that. The problem starts when you enter into the system with fiat money, which is obviously have a perimeter of jurisdiction, a perimeter of compliance that every actor should comply. And the problem starts when you sell crypto and you buy fiat. So you sell crypto and you buy euro, for example, USD. So the let's say the advancement that have happened in my view since months are number one, from a VAT point of view, from an IRS point of view, so from a tax point of view.
Capital gain, I guess.
Yeah, all the big exchanges are introducing tax report to make sure that, for example, in the US, your crypto holding contributes to your income tax. The same does not apply in different jurisdictions. So the moment you hold crypto, then this composes income, this part of the income, and then you pay taxes based on the income. In other countries, you pay taxes only based on profits you realize. So this means you might not be taxed your crypto holding, okay? By the time you buy, they don't contribute to your tax amount, but by the time you realize a profit by selling this asset and buying another one, you realize a profit, then you pay a percentage based on the profits. And in some jurisdiction, this is automatically triggered by the exchange with a kind of tax report to be filed on an ongoing basis. In other countries, like Italy, you have to do it on a voluntary basis. So this means at the end of the fiscal period, then you have to create your Excel spreadsheet, calculate how much tax you're going to pay based on holdings and based on profits, and then you submit your tax declaration to the authority saying, hey, voluntarily, I realize this profit and I'm willing to pay this amount. So now, well, to come back and circle back your original question, most of the advancements in the regulation are concerning. So exchanges, KYC, anti-money laundering, FATF guidance, and tax reports. Those are the main, improvements from the overall perspective that happened in the regulatory framework in crypto land.
So important clarification now available for everybody dealing with Bitcoin. But let's clarify something else, which is for our users. I think it within the mobile ecosystem forum. It's probably simplified. The new DM, and we haven't talked about it, but Novi. So DM is a generic, a new the coin, let's say. But the Facebook announced its own wallet. So soon you will be able to pay within WhatsApp or Facebook. Yeah. By using your wallet, which is called Novi. Now, that does have some implication for our members, and I would just venture some of them. Let's see if Daniela agrees with me. First of all, I mean, it really reduces and refocuses what Novi would do. Before, we were talking about with Calibro and others about all of these banking potentials, but here it's really about a payment system. Very simple. You can pay any spectrum of dollars. Now, some people would say, well, I can already pay by dollar or something else. Why bother? But I guess that's where the Bitcoin facility arrives. First, you're not using Bitcoin as a, which is a very volatile instrument still because it goes up and down. You have something which is makes closer to what real money you have in your wallet. And is it then an assumption that using Novi, it will be faster, easier to exchange money and things like that? I mean, the real advantage to buy content or to buy services online would be that one, would it be?
I mean, let's say I'm talking to many, many brands right now that are, you know, that are willing to consider the adoption of crypto, provided all the compliance and so on and so forth, including reputation risks to be mitigated. So everyone, literally every brand in the world right now has crypto to their agenda. So they are looking at it and they would like to integrate this as a method of payment, okay? But at the same time, what are the most widely known crypto in the world? So say Bitcoin and Ethereum. Both of them are excellent store of value. They're assets, digital property. If you like it, then you can hold it, and you might hope that it's going to happen price. As long as you believe, likely it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's 100% true, but let's say markets are influenced by the fact that people believe or not. But Both of them, BTC and so Bitcoin and Ethereum, Ether, are not great method of payments. Why? Because first of all, they have been initially designed, but right now reality is that they're not. So if you want to pay your coffee with Bitcoin, well, number one, Bitcoin, if you bought Bitcoin, probably you bought it because you hope that it's going up in price. Most of the people buying Bitcoin because of this reason, which is the speculation component. So then if you have an asset which is likely increasing price, people are not really happy to trade or to sell this asset because your coffee in US dollar relative terms increase over time. So people start thinking in USD terms. So your XYZ Bitcoin today in USD terms increase in price over time, even though the amount of BTC Bitcoin you paid is stay the same, but only because BTC increased in relative term, you think you paid more, which is a wrong narrative. Because if you're in crypto, you should not think in USD term, but you should think only one Bitcoin equal to one Bitcoin today, tomorrow, and the day after. Okay. So number one, there is this psychological component of people thinking that this price changing because of the relative fluctuation among the US dollar or euro and the crypto. And number two, it exposes the payment transaction to unpredictable amount of time and cost. So this means it might be that to pay just $1 coffee, you have to wait 15 minutes to have the transaction being confirmed on the blockchain. So you cannot leave the shop until transaction is confirmed because payment is not executed. And you might be exposed to a transaction cost that might exceed the price of the good you're paying for. So this means to buy $1 coffee, you might pay $10 transaction cost. Not that is not for Bitcoin, it's much more for Ethereum, that it's depending on network congestion. So to me, both of them are not really good payment tools. They're excellent, you know, store of value and all the rest, digital property, but from a payment method point of view, they're not excellent. So that's the opportunity for Diem and other branded currencies. You know, I'm very much involved into this topic with digital bits, because at the end of the day, where there is a lot of value to extract is every time a brand interact with their fans, with the users, they want to have an efficient method of payment. And they want to be exposed to, you know, volatility or increase in price or unpredictable time and cost of the transaction. So to me, Diem, it's about providing convenience, provide a secure execution time, cheap transactions, so as within the Facebook ecosystem, they can plug a new crypto payment, which from an efficiency point of view is better than Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Danilo, that's a great way to end, because it's almost like the beginning of our next chat. Then we need to talk a bit more about how these setting up of this payment system based on the blockchain technologies could be faster and easy to use and cheap, as you were saying. For the time being, I think we spend all the time and more where we could use. I'm also sure that the Facebook chapter is not finished there. We'll have to come back for even one more episode.
SAG will continue. Yeah.
Exactly. It should see in your subtitles there, to be continued. But for now, Daniele, thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to our next chat.
Thank you. My great pleasure. Thank you, Daniele.